nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Today's topic will be wave particle interaction characterization, and specifically we will be talking about confocal microscopy. Our first speaker will be Dr. Fatima Pir-Chokhmak. She's actually a postdoctoral researcher. She's at MIT in Boston. And you may recognize her last name. She and our Dr. Chokhmak is actually our couple, a distance couple right now. Penn State in here in State College, Pennsylvania, and Fatima is in Boston, Massachusetts. So we're really excited to have Fatima here today.
So I'm going to talk about confocal microscope today and my research during my PhD, mostly at Penn State. But before going further into confocal microscopes, I want to talk about size of the things we are looking at, right? Why do we need first in the first place a microscope? Because the things we want to look at are quite small. If you think a solar system we are living in, it's like 1 billion meters, such a huge system. If you just like think Boston and Providence, it's just like 100,000 kilometers and a size that we can gather. And humans are in the range of like a couple of meters. And if you look at a cell, cell size is around, eukaryotic cell, it changes around like 100 micrometer, and it's also like around 100,000 meters. So, but like we can see cells, but we also want to look the molecule inside the cells. They are even smaller. They are actually around 1 over billion meters, around nanometer range. So, what did people, humankind, come up as a solution? Microscopes. When you think about the microscope, actually as this little cute kid is holding, the lens is the key. Why do I say so? Because the first people discovered lenses, and that's how it started forming a microscope. If you think when the first microscope is founded, it's around 1595. It is founded by Hans and Jensen. And this is the first compound microscope. And then when we think more sophisticated methods, and in all when he was looking actually cork, he was actually looking at the bottles in the cork, and he thought about the rooms where the priest stayed, and he decided to use this name to describe what he was seeing. This is like what he actually observed under the microscope, these little rooms, and it reminded him the rooms where the priest stayed. And then actually the first person who observed real cells is immediately after Hooke, Antonello Leeuwenhoek, Dutch guy, amateur scientist, so people actually snubbed him. He actually had a different name for the cells, but they didn't use his definition. They went with the academic person who was the Hooke. So they described when they look at living cells, they use the cell as a definition. And this is actually very interesting because this is like the microscope Anton von used. This is such a small, tiny microscope, which is kind of very amazing, right? How far we have come. So this is just basic lenses and just like knobs, and this is like people are just a really good engineering at the time, whatever they have, and they were able to like form these little small things. And so they were able to like observe not a great resolution or anything, but just like a, whatever they can get their hands off, because it was very laborious and they didn't have the technology we have today. So we came to the modern microscopes, right? We start from very simple thing. The engineers and physicists, they just build up all those things together. And then we came up with this modern microscope. Modern microscope actually has tons of lenses instead of like, if you remember, I just show you in the first one, you had two lenses, very simple, and you were able to only just magnify things 3 or 9 times more. But when you have the modern microscope, we have this technology right now, so we are able to like use this technology and put tons of lenses everywhere and like build this more complicated machines compared to the like first ones, and we can actually get 100 magnification, and we can even get better resolution than the limit of light. So what you have here is that you have usually this is just a general microscope. I just show like this is just a body of the microscope. You put your sample here, and this is your lens. You can actually look your sample under this, and this is a light source. This is actually a simple one, and so you can actually have other types if you want to look at fluorescence microscope. You have other sources like laser powers. Just you can see here the light. It's coming through the sample. This is the stage. And you have all these other parts actually in the microscope helping you to get a better resolution. You can look at your sample from your eyepiece. You have the objective here, and objective determines like your refractive index, your numerical aperture, and this also very important determining the resolution you will observe. So these are condenser, which condenses the light, and you have the diaphragm. It helps you to just choose the light, how much you want. You can actually have different filters, and you can have a collector lens, and you can actually just use a lamp house, or actually you can just use at these days they use just lasers to as a light source, and you will have you can actually have a computer just to see, just reflect whatever you are seeing. You can actually focus your sample, you can have all these things, and it's actually easy to customize all these things for your sample. As I said, you are actually have this like all these eyepiece, filter cubes, and you can have the lasers, and you have your sample here, and you have the computer, and whatever you see here, and you can see here. So just in case like everybody is not familiar with the fluorescence, fluorescence is just the when you excite a sample, dye molecule or whatever you have in your sample, and it will emit light, and you can collect this light by using this technology, by using the same PET light you're exciting the sample. So you have this camera, and you can actually just collect all of this data. You have these detectors, and you can collect all this data, and you can just turn to an image, and this image will give you the will give details about your fluorescence intensity in your sample. And whatever you label, for instance, you are labeling a biomolecule in a like cell, and then you will see the biomolecule you labeled in the cell, where exactly it's located, and you can even see the concentration, because the labeling efficiency is gonna, whatever you labeled is, if it is like higher higher light intensity is there, it indicates you have more dye molecules there. If it's a lower fluorescence efficiency, fluorescence intensity, you will see like less like a dim signal, and you can actually get quite quantitative data out of this. So this is just an example, like you see here, but you can use different labels and just look at different properties of the molecules. So what is the special thing about laser scanning confocal microscopy, if you ask? Actually, now the microscopes all have very like standard things, but for the scanning confocal microscope, I'm not talking about very fancy ones, but just like a just general in terms of if someone asks you, the thing you should know about the laser scanning confocal microscopy is that you need a pinhole. Pinhole is the reason laser scanning confocal microscopy has a better resolution. People prefer to use this one. What does it mean, right? So if you think about, like, you have your sample here, right? And you're just exciting sample with a laser light, right? And then you're collecting this very dim signal coming out of your sample. And all this dim signal is coming at the same time. If you look at all your sample, if you look at just epifluorescence, just a regular fluorescence microscope, it will come all at the same time. And this is what's going to happen is that you cannot differentiate between the slices of layers of the sample you have. Because think about a cell. Cell has a wide, like, it's not just one slice, right? You have all these heterogeneous systems just being distributed all over the cell. Like, think about the thickness of the cell, right? You will have different properties, all this thickness. If you want to just look at the one slice of the cell or the sample, you will need to focus on that part. And you want to just collect the data coming out of that. How can you do this? And ingenuity of people, mankind, it still shows up. You basically put this, like, pinhole aperture, right? You still get signals from the sample at the same time. But with this pinhole, actually, you're only collecting the certain plane you want to focus on. So, for instance, you have all these planes, let's say three planes that are coming all of them, but you can actually make this hole because the signals coming from two other planes is not going to be able to come back to the detector. So you're only going to see the signals coming only from one plane. You can see here, like, very nice illustration, right? See, it is just coming on the one plane. Other two planes are just, like, going to be not collected from the detector. It's still there. You're not doing anything to your sample. It's still there, but you're just collecting some certain region, and it actually lets you just slice up, like, your sample. It's quite nice. You're just slicing up, and you're just observing that part of your sample. I think quite a simple method. You just have a hole. You just put this, like, little quiet hole, and you can actually adjust the hole if you want to have, like, a smaller, like, thickness. You can have a smaller pinhole, and then if you want a bigger one, you can actually open. I had to actually have to do experiment. In one time, I had to open this hole all the way because I wanted to collect the signals from all of the sample. This is just a further showing that illustration how wide field versus point scanning differs. As I said, when you have the wide field scanning, because you are able to look at, like, a certain slice, and it gives you better resolution. And how this, have a better resolution because you're more partition. Right. I usually don't change within the same experiment. Fluorescence, right? So you have this. Coefficient by using this half time. And this diffusion coefficient lets you know. It's quite fast. It doesn't really matter what type. almost same or see whether they form a bilayer or not by the, just seeing their have their dynamic properties. Around my and I just you can see the
Moving around or the drop.
Forms quite interesting.